originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside my usual entry mate, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Pope Jude, Jude Feld. And we are welcoming everybody who is joining us right now on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201 and everyone tuning in worldwide. You're doing that with our live streaming available on our website, horseracingradio.net. And of course, so many of you tuning into this program and all of our talk shows via podcast after they air. So we want to welcome you to the program here as well. Happy to have you along for the next hour as we welcome another brand new guest to Trainer Talk. I mean, here we go. The beat goes on. Another trainer that we have not visited with on this program, somebody who is just getting started with their career, at least on the training side of things. Jude, it always fascinates me when we talk to so many of the trainers in this game, guys like Wayne Catalano, for example, or Wesley Ward, that began their careers as jockeys and then decided, you know what, I can't ride anymore. Let me stay involved with the sport. Let me get involved on the training side of things. And that's what we have here tonight as well.
We've got a guy that has a tremendous amount of experience in the thoroughbred business. And he's not your usual fledgling trainer. He's a man that knows the backside and knows his way around. And his start is nothing short of red hot. I mean,
say the least.
Yeah. So it's a unique situation where we have somebody with a tremendous amount of experience and just starting a new facet of a career in thoroughbred racing.
Well, tonight's guest, he is a native of Colombia, but he's been here in the United States for quite some time now. 15 starters to his credit on the training side of things. How about this? 5 winners. That's right. 33% of his starters have won. That's not a bad start to a career. He is Jorge Duarte Jr., and he joins us now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jorge, congratulations on the success and welcome to the program.
Mike and Jude, thank you very much for having me on the show. We've been very fortunate for a good start, and we'll see if we can carry it on.
What's been the key to the fast start?
I think Alan Goldberg, which has been my supporter, and Richard Santulli, gave me the opportunity to train these horses. Just the right horses in the right races, and they were doing good at the right moment. We got off to a good start, and it's a tough meet, but we got to try to carry on.
Sometimes it's just that easy, huh? Put a good horse on the track and go to the winner's circle.
Yeah, it takes a lot. Everything has to fall in place. Everybody knows that. It's not an easy game, day by day, we keep going, and things fall in place. We're in good shape.
You know, you say that now you have to keep it going, and you've kind of set the bar pretty high to start off. How challenging is it now to keep this ball rolling and to keep winning at a high rate?
There's more expectations. It's better when you're under the radar. Nobody knows you, and they're like, we never heard of this guy. We throw him out of this race. We lose this trainer. But now people, expect us to carry it on. It's not easy. You're running against the best. Hopefully we do the right decisions. The horses, right spots and carry it on.
Yeah, it's tough when you start out with 5 winners in 15 starts, 33%. Everybody, like you say, is expecting you to win at that clip for the rest of your life. And we all know that it doesn't work that way. The horses lose conditions, and sometimes you need to give a horse a rest or whatever, and you don't have the numbers. But I'll tell you what, nothing beats winning, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll try our best to carry it on. We got a good team. Kind of the same team we had with Alan Goldberg. So we have all our same guys in the same positions, and, you know, we'll see what happens, you know. I was in Saudi Arabia before, and I used to work for the King Abdullah. I was assistant for Julio Gardel, and he trained Premium Tap and Nicolas Bachelard. He was a former for Christophe Clément. And we had a lot of expectations then because the King always wanted to win, so we always try to cover all the bases because it was a tough game. You don't win over there, you get fired. So it was tough.
How much did that experience help you in coming back here to the States and starting your own business, Jorge?
Well, I can tell you the pressure is a little less. You know, I'm very fortunate to have Richard Santulli and, you know, Alan Goldberg as a racing manager, I could call it. You know, he's actually here in Florida as of today. And, you know, sorry about that. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. So I'm very fortunate to have, you know, these owners and Al that are, you know, they've been in the game for 40, 50 years, and they're, you know, they know how the game runs. So it's a little easier anyways than Saudi Arabia.
Well, the thing is, when you come back home, you kind of have a better feel for what goes on here in the States and what you need to do to be successful here, because you've been in the business so long.
Yes, you know, I could say the racing here is different. I've been in a lot of countries before, Saudi Arabia, in Dubai, France, Colombia, Panama. Believe it or not, the racing is the same concept. You always want to win, but, you know, definitely, like, the entry box is different. The way they train is different. But, you know, I grew up here, so I'm used to everything here. I rode races here. So, you know, this is my home, and this is where I feel comfortable anyway.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the riding side of things and that portion of your career, Jorge. We'll talk about that. We'll talk more about the Saudi Arabia experience. We'll talk more about your relationship with Alan Goldberg and Richard Santulli. But let's kind of set this up for our guests the right way. Start at the beginning. Let's kind of walk through the career and the racing career and the life of Jorge Duarte Jr. Where did this love of horse racing begin?
Well, I come from my dad, he was a jockey. He was the only person involved in racing was my dad. He lived close to a track in Colombia, and he got started, and they told him that he was going to be too heavy to ride. He had to ride right away, and because he had a short career. That career turned into a 30-year career riding. I was a kid, baby, when I was in Florida. He was riding in Florida, Calder, Gulfstream, Hialeah. And I grew up in that environment. Actually, at first, I didn't really like it, to be honest with you. It turned my attention when I was like 13 years old. We went back home to Colombia. My dad started a jockey school. And I saw these kids get on horses at my age, you know, 13, 12 years old, to be a jockey. They wanted to be jockeys. And I'm like, man, I could be a jockey too if these guys are going to be jockeys, you know. My dad was a jockey. I probably could learn a couple things from him, even being around him at home, you know, just asking him things. And my dad didn't really want me to be a jockey. I was going to school, like bilingual school, and it was morning shift. And it was hard for him to give up and say, okay, I'm going to put you in an afternoon school and you could go to the racetrack in the morning. Start doing that, you know, got started there, win like 5 races in Colombia. Shipped me to Panama at age 14. Rode in Panama, very successful. You know, was very fortunate to get a very good opportunity there. Second lead rider the first 3 months of the year. And the trainers, Alberto Paz Rodriguez, which he came to the Caribbean Classic and won a stake, he told me, kid, you got to stop riding because, you know, your bugs start running and you got to go to the States. This is a no-brainer. You're a U.S. citizen, speak English, you got to go. So I told my dad, I said, you know, these people want me to go to the States. What do you think? And I said, well, I'm ready. And he says, well, I don't know. You don't have nobody. You're 15 years old, 14, 15 years old. You can't really go now. So I stopped my bug. And I came to New York when I was middle 15. Like I was like 6 months to turn 16 because of the age limit in New York.
You know, as I was reading, Jorge, as I was reading some articles getting ready for the show here, I went back to your riding career when you were just getting started. You mentioned the age 14, 15. You weren't old enough to ride yet. When you were getting ready to make your debut, there was an article out there in the New York Post that was written by Ed Fontaine, and the title of the article was Colombian Phenom Set for New York Debut. And the first line of the article started like this. Braulio Baeza, Manny Icaza, Jacinto Vasquez, Jorge Velasquez, Lafitte Pincay, Jorge Duarte Jr. That was the first line of the article.
Very high to start.
Yeah, no expectations there, huh?
Yeah, you know, it was to me everything was new as far as, you know, riding and everything. You know, I just wanted, you know, start making a living because it just me and my mom in New York, and you know how New York is. I was fortunate that Steve Adica, my agent, which he had Javier Castellano at the time, let me stay at his place. So you know, it's like our expectations. Like I need to make it because if I don't make it, I got to go back home. You know, there's no way or another. And Alan Goldberg, I let me go to his farm at age 15 because I was not allowed at the track. So I went to Colts Neck Stables. You know, in 2000, I started breeding horses, and I was there twice a week. And I did that until the day I was able to ride. And I turned 16 on a Tuesday, and I rode November 1st. All the races I had didn't go. The only one that went was Alan Goldberg's, and then the 8 race in Aqueduct on the 1st of November. And we won at 20-1, so that was a fun day anyway.
You always start out fast, don't you?
Seemed that way. I mean, it was a... The expectations were low. I was 90 pounds at the time, and I don't remember getting no instructions. He just complained about so much lead I gave the horse. He had to tack up the horse with like 20 pounds of lead, and he was like, well, how much you weigh? What's wrong with you? And next thing I know, I got legged up, and the rest just unfolded for our favor, so that was good.
Yeah, you were small even by jockey standards.
Yeah, at the time, well, it was a kid, you know. Just turned 16. I was smaller than the normal 16-year-old kids, you know. That carried me for a good time until, you know, I was in my mid-20s. Then my weight got a little bit tough, but I always worked at it, and it seemed like the weight really never was the reason I quit anyways.
I read where Alan had said that you weren't very strong when you first started riding, but you had good hands and got along very well with all the horses. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, Alan always been meant to have very nice horses, and his horses were strong and they were tough at the time. I was a kid, but I still managed to get by, and I probably could have waited another year, but like I said earlier in the show, it was like either I make it or I have to go back home. He wanted me to wait another year, stay at the farm, get out more horses. You know, could have unfolded different, but who knows? You know, we just went forward and did what we did.
Well, a lot of times, trainers always think that their horses one work away or two works short or whatever, and they probably do the same dealing with young riders. I mean, you have to temper the enthusiasm sometimes. But nothing beats learning by doing in this business. Do you agree with that? Nothing beats learning by doing in this business. Do you agree?
Yes. In this business, in every position, I would say, you just sometimes you got to just go out there and do it and learn from your mistakes and... at least when you have the same situation again, at least you have the experience. You have to just go out there and do it.
Talking with trainer Jorge Duarte Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton tonight. Jorge, when you were riding, you were also extremely fit. Not only were you a bit on the light side, but you were very strong in the fact that you would do multiple push-ups every morning, like 500 push-ups every morning. Is that right?
I was, a little obsessed with the gym, which I don't really follow up on it right now. But, Yeah, I was fit. I would, work out a lot, swim a lot. I could say I was very fit when I rode, that's for sure.
So when you get into the starting gate, and I mentioned some of those Hall of Fame names that went through the same jockey school in Panama that you did, but when you get into the starting gate for the first time in New York and you look right, you look left, and you see all those big name riders, what was that moment like for you?
That was pretty unique. That's something you dream of when you're a kid, and just the fact of being there, I was already excited. Now the fact of winning, that was like, it was icing on the cake. I actually thought, I just want to give my horse a good trip. I wasn't there. I had expectations I was going to win. Just when Robbie Davis moved a little soon and I was kind of inside, I had to wait and come around. And I'm like, man, I could probably win this thing. I got a lot of horse. And I got up. That was it. So it was fun.
Did you have certain guys that you tried to emulate or look up to?
Yes. You learn from everybody. From the trainer side, from the jockeys, but now that I'm training and I look up to a lot of these guys. It's not an easy business. Everybody paid their dues, but you just see a little bit about everybody, the way they do things, and learn every day. So I like how Chad Brown does his things. I like how Fletcher runs his things. Like everything they do, but I worked for Nicholas Bachelard. He was former assistant for Christophe Coman. He was a very, very good mentor for me, and I look up to him still, and I say, I really appreciate what he did for me.
Talk a little bit more about that relationship with trainer Alan Goldberg, because you mentioned that it goes back to even before you started riding back in around 2000. Talk a little bit about how that relationship came about.
Alan, from day one, for some reason, he liked me, and I always been very humble, and I want to work hard, and try to go forward and try to get the opportunities. And he always gave me a chance. I mean, even when I was a journeyman and I was only 17 years old, I went a lot of races for him at Parks and Mama, and everywhere. He would get mad at me, but he would keep coming back, and I would always go to the farm and check with them and say hello, and we kept a very good relationship throughout. And he's been a big supporter. When they offered me this job, I was kind of shocked that he's been very good to me.
Well, there must be something about you that he likes, and that's a tribute to him that he's loyal to you, even on days when maybe you didn't ride a horse the way he wanted or something. A lot of guys would just fold their tent and go home, but that's great to have somebody like that in your corner all the time.
Yeah, I always kept my head down, and when I did a mistake, I agreed that it was my fault, and I kept checking with him, and if he took me off horses that couple months or a year, he'll take me off, but eventually he'll put me back on. So, I just kept trying, and, we kept winning. To the last day I rode, we won a race in Belmont with a filly that was first time on the turf. It was like my first winner, and last winner was for Alan Goldberg, Richard Santulli, same connections.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, what a great way to bookend it all. And, when you look up the riding statistics for Jorge Duarte Jr. on Equibase, you see that he won 424 races in North America, but those don't include the victories that you had outside of North America. And I think the total is actually closer to about 750 races worldwide, Jorge?
About 700. A lot of races in Panama, Colombia, and Saudi Arabia. I win a lot of races. In France, I never got to win, but I didn't stay there that long. We're just very fortunate wherever we went. When I was riding second call for the King Abdullah, we won races every week. They had, very good horses, and we were showing up there in the winner's circle a lot. But that was good.
Yeah, you just can't float the name King Abdullah out there and just let it hang out there, Jorge. Talk about that. That's a pretty special honor to be able to ride for the King. How did that come about?
Well, believe it or not, in 1990s, my dad was riding Calder, and he was the crown prince. He wasn't king yet, but he was crown prince. They were looking for two riders from North America, and they picked up Kellen Clark and George Duarte, which was my dad. So we went there in the 90s, and it was very different at the time what it is now. You know, they were starting in racing and trying to get bigger, and you know, money was not an issue for them. They flew us all out there, and we lived there for 6-8 months, and we had that connection. And so when back in 05, my dad had a slow year, and he ended up going back to Saudi Arabia to ride. And I went to see him, and because Parks was closed, I went to see him, and the king that was currently king, he died. So Crown Prince Abdullah became king, and they had like a 14 race card, and they asked me if I could ride. I said, sure, I'll ride. And I ended up winning like two races that week, so I was like in a way, and they offered me a job. And they told my dad that, you know, he wanted to be like an assistant to the trainer at the time, and that's how it came out. You know, my dad ended up going to be an assistant, and it was the jockey, the King Abdullah statement.
So your position was kind of handed down from your father?
Pretty much, you know, but it was one of those deals where my dad said, bring your tack, because you never know. And that happened, and I was, you know, available, and they used me on some horses, and we got lucky and won a couple races, and they said, well, maybe this kid could stay here and ride. We were looking for riders anyway, so here you go.
How much different is it riding races in Saudi Arabia than it is here in the States?
It's a little bit different strategy-wise. Plus, you got 18-horse fields, so it gets a little, you know, rough in those turns, but they have a very big track, so that helps a little bit. But when I say strategy, like, our barn could run four horses in one race. So we might use pace to our advantage or pack up the pace if you know, we need it. You know, it depends. You know, the horse that from the other prince has speed and he's tough, we'll send one out there to, you know, burn him up a little bit and run into the speed duel and try to soften them up for the horses that were coming from behind from the king. So that's the only difference, I could say.
What's it like living in Saudi Arabia, Jorge?
Very different. Very different. You know, they're Muslims. You know, there's no alcohol. There's women used to use the abayas up to like a couple years. Women can't drive. You know, it's not as social as here. They have their ways of doing things. They close for six times every place for prayers. But as far as the aspect of the barn, Frank McGovern was the racing manager, and he was a vet. He's Irish, and he does a really good operation. And the barn was just like any of these big barns here. You know, so working-wise, I didn't feel I was in Saudi Arabia. Just when you stepped out the gate, you're like, oh, man, back to reality here.
What's your favorite Saudi Arabian cuisine?
I like the... It's like a rice with chicken they make. They kind of cook it for a long time. Cassava, it's like rice with chicken. It's very delicious, very tender, and, you know, it's very, very good. They have, you know, lamb, very good there. But they have also a lot of international restaurants. You know, they have it. Anything, you know, they have it. You know, those guys over there. You know, they're a very wealthy country, so anything they want, they get it.
Texas Roadhouse.
Yeah, they have it all. They have Applebee's, they have everything, you know, that's for sure.
Well, you'd have a place to eat then, huh, Mike?
I'd be good. I'm a big chain guy, so I'm good. If I can find a Texas Roadhouse or a Chili's or something like that, I'm good.
They have it. You name it, they have it.
I'm the only guy that went to New Orleans and ate at a TGI Fridays my first night there.
Really? I get adventurous. I try stuff, but then I go back to basics. Go back to my steak and mashed potatoes and stuff like that.
He's a good man. He's Jorge Duarte Jr. He's joining us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. As you heard, he had an illustrious career as a jockey. He is now training horses on his own. He has started off extremely well, to say the least. Five winners, from 15 starters to kick off that career, and he's trying to keep it rolling now as he moves forward at Gulfstream Park. As you can hear, he's in his car driving down the Florida Turnpike, recording the show with us that you're listening to right now, and he's heading to Gulfstream to saddle another horse. And Jorge, it doesn't stop. It didn't stop when you were on the riding side of things, and it doesn't stop now that you're a trainer either. The work ethic and the time you have to put into this sport to be successful is the same, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you gotta love it because it's a lot of hours, and you know, you drive a lot of places, and you gotta keep your drive high. You know, you gotta keep going. The game don't stop. And whatever you did yesterday, that's the next page. That's it. You gotta see what they do today.
How often do you have to make trips, like between Tampa and Gulfstream, and you know, just for the races? What's your overall schedule like?
I often go to the races. I have an assistant named Nicholas Galati. He's a Florida guy. He's been here a long time. He trained horses also. And you know, we make a good team. You know, but for the most part, I like to show up just to see how the horses run, how they come back, and you know, see all the action. Very rarely I would just skip a day. Some days we go to Cala with the balls to look at the babies. We have at Groupies and Randy Bradshaw. So we're always moving around. Tampa, we don't go much. Try to honor that Gulfstream that gives us the opportunity to be here. We try to run here. But unless there's something really out of character, we'll probably go to Tampa.
As a former jockey, Jorge, do you find yourself maybe being even a little more particular about the riders that you put on your horses, or about the way that those horses are ridden when you give those jockeys a leg up?
Yeah, I try to not give much instructions, really, because from my point of view, no matter what you tell them, gate opens, horse breaks fast, breaks slow, breaks, and, you know, gets involved or whatever, it's up to them. You know, I kind of try to pick the right guy for the right horse, but, you know, you also have the demand that some guys are taking, and so, you know, you got to try to fit it, you know, see what's best for your horse. I don't always ride the big guys. I'm a believer that some of the guys that, you know, that I know will try, even if they're not winning. So I give everybody a chance as long as, you know, I think it fits my horse.
Yeah, you say pick the right guy for the right horse, and I guess that would be the right guy or gal for the right horse, too. Give me an example of that. A jockey that would be a good fit for a speed horse, or a jockey that's a good fit for a turf horse, or a come-from-behind horse. Give me an example of some jockeys that fit your horses best.
Well, I like sometimes on the price, too. You know, I like, I feel like, you know, some of the cheaper horses, I don't use like the IRAs and stuff like that, just because you know, some horses that maybe don't have a lot of form or don't look very fast on paper, and you know, I just like to put somebody that at least, you know, I'm going to get a fair shot. Not saying that they're not going to try. I think they will try, but and then, you know, horses better regarded by the boss, by Rich. You know, I'll try to do the best I can as far as get the better rider anyways for them.
We're visiting with trainer Jorge Duarte Jr. on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to step away for a quick break. We'll come back. Second half of the program, we'll talk a little bit about Jorge's philosophy. We'll talk more about that fast start and that relationship with Richard Santulli as well. That's all ahead is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. You know, it's never too late to start talking racing at Woodbine. Major race dates you can look forward to later this year include the Woodbine Oaks on June 8th, the Queen's Plate June 29th, the Woodbine Mile September 14th, the Grade 1 Summer in Natalma Stakes on September 15th, and the Grade 1 Canadian International October 12th. Opening day at Woodbine, April 20th, turf racing beginning mid-May. Tickets on sale for the two-day Queen's Plate Festival right now. Visit woodbine.com/queensplate. Nominate now to the 2019 Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old in Training Sale. The Gulfstream sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FasicTipton.com.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet runs December 1st through March 31st with live racing Wednesday through Sunday, with the $9 million Pegasus World Cup set for January the 26th, a program which also features the first running of the $7 million Pegasus Turf Cup and the return of the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship on Friday, January 25th and Saturday, January 26th. The $1 million Florida Derby on March 30th will wrap up the championship meet at Gulfstream Park. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the contest.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you back with us coast to coast and worldwide here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as we continue to visit with trainer Jorge Duarte Jr. And if you missed any portion of the program, it's simple. All you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, and download us, take a listen, and listen wherever you might be. And it's been a fun first half of the show too, JT. Looking forward to the second half.
Yeah, very interesting story, and Jorge's got it all together.
A little different path than a lot of trainers that we talk to.
Not typical, but also, you know, a lot of experience and a lot of interesting worldly experience going everywhere and learning from some top people and having that international experience, I think, is always a plus for a trainer.
Yeah, if you are just joining us, Jorge, a native of Colombia, but he's been here in the United States since he was very, very young. He attended the Panamanian Jockey School, and we talked about that in the first half of the program. Had a very successful riding career here in the United States and around the world. He spent time in Saudi Arabia working with King Abdullah as his rider, and that is quite a privilege in its own right. And now he is training horses on his own after spending a lot of time with Alan Goldberg and some of the other trainers in the game that he mentioned in the first half of the program. 15 starters to begin his career. 5 of those have won. And he's back with us now, second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jorge, I can imagine that in your wildest dreams, you never imagined that your training career was going to get off to this kind of start.
No, you know, you always just try to get your horses to the better level and see if you can compete, especially when we come down here. You know, they don't give them away. You got to earn them, and it's tough. You know, you get very good horses come out of here and turn out to win a lot of big stakes races. So it's a tough meet, especially when you're starting out.
Yeah, and Gulfstream is a great place to be in the wintertime. What's your schedule going to look like now moving forward?
We'll go back to Jersey in April. Alan, you know, he's still racing manager. I'm kind of in a private job position because you know, I only work for Rich and I at this stage. I don't know if, you know, we're going to go, like, I will retake the horses again or they're just going to leave it how it is. You know, I'm just blessed to get the opportunity right now. You know, if we have got to go back and, you know, join them back as an assistant, I'm totally fine with it. I think Rich, you know, whenever he feels ready to give me all the horses, you know, he'll just pull the trigger. But, you know, right now I'm getting my feet wet, trying to get more confidence with him because Alan and Rich, they go back 30 years plus. So it's been a bond for a long time. You know, they've been together so long, it's hard to transition the boss into changing trainers anyway.
Talk about some of the advantages or the differences between training privately for somebody like Richard Santulli or being a public trainer and training for a whole bunch of different people, Jorge.
Yeah, well, it's, in a way, it's a little bit more job security, a little bit. You know, you can still get fired anytime, but, you know, it feels better because, you know, you only got one person to talk to. He's been in the business a long time. You know, I don't mind being public either, you know. Welcome new owners and do our best for them. You know, like, I grew up with them, so it feels better that what I'm doing with, you know, like, training horses for Rich and Al as a racing manager. So it doesn't feel any different than when I was assistant or training. It just might, you know, because I'm doing the same thing we've always done. And, you know, when I come down to Florida for 5 years already, they usually turn me loose and, you know, I'll train the horses, and even though they ran on Al's name, but, you know, he gave me a very good free rein, and I think he's kind of polishing me off for what I'm doing now.
If you were to sum up your philosophy and your approach to training, you've worked with so many people around the world now. Whose approach would you say that you most closely emulate?
I learned a lot from all the trainers I worked for. Like I always say, they always do things different. I'm very particular in the barn as far as, like, Nicholas Bachelard is and probably, like, Christoph Coman is as far as the barn aspect. The training aspect, I worked for an Argentinian trainer with the babies. He's very successful. He trained Premium Tap. He was second in the World Cup. He took that horse. You know, I worked around those kind of horses with him, and he's a very good trainer with the babies. And then Al has a mix of everything as far as the business aspect, as training. You know, those three guys, I could say, you know, you package them up and, you know, get the best what they have, and I try to put all that together, and we like to be working. We're not going to change anything anyway.
Well, it's nice that you have that that background, and that Alan Goldberg kind of set you free, as you mentioned. Got to give you a lot of confidence as you move forward in the business, and knowing that these guys have your back and that they're not going to second guess a lot of the things that you do.
Yes, you know, Alan's plan day one. You know, I was in Saudi Arabia. I was working for the King. I was assistant for Julio Gardel. You know, he told me to come back home. He said, I really want to retire in the near future. I need to get somebody I trust in here and, you know, see how we do things and learn and, you know, pay my dues. And then he said, when I think you're ready, I'm going to turn you loose and, you know, we're going to run the horses in Florida in your name and see if Rich kind of goes along with it. And if things are good, he said, I'm going to retire because, he was turning 65 at the time. Now he's 69, going 70. He says, I'm tired of getting up in the mornings and do this every day. He says, you're younger and you know, you're somebody who's going to take care of Rich because he's taken care of me for 30 years. So that was his approach. That was the plan.
You mentioned the business aspect and that Alan is very good with that side of the training business. How important is that, Jorge? I mean, there's more than just showing up and saddling a horse, right?
Very important as far as, you know, like the accounting and stuff like that. You know, he went to school at Drexel, and I believe he's in business. He has a graduate in business, Alan Goldberg. very good with the numbers, and you know, is you know, and you gotta pay attention in that too. You know, you wanna be successful. It's not just winning races. You kind of have to make sense as far as your costs in the barn. You know, I keep all track of all our expenses. You know, get the better deal for my owner. You know, it's one bill, but still, you know, you want to keep it down. But at the same time, you got to take care of the horses. So it's challenging sometimes.
Trainer Jorge Duarte Jr., our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Facing Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You mentioned your dad and the influence that he had on your career, especially early on when you were riding races. How about the rest of your family? Anybody else involved in the sport in any way?
Only child from my my mom's side, anyways. My dad has one more son, but nobody else carried the horses, so it's just me.
That's kind of unusual, because usually it gets in your blood and everybody's involved.
Yeah. You know, some of my uncles tried to gout horses, but that didn't really work out. And actually, they were a little bit big for jockeys or even riders. So they gave it up. And yeah, it just sucks. My dad and myself. And my dad's retired in Colombia now. So, but he's always very involved with whatever we do here, and comes up to Florida a couple times a year, and you know, stays close anyways.
I know your godfather, who was a horse owner, Robert Perez, was very instrumental in bringing you to the attention of your agent early on when you first came to the States and started riding races. How about his influence on everything that you were able to accomplish early on?
Yeah, well, you know, he really helped me a lot as far as, you know, connections. And, you know, I didn't know anybody when I got to New York, and you know, he really was, you know, legged me up a lot and hooked me up with Steve Adica and some other trainers, and, you know, big supporter anyways.
If you could go back, Jorge, and do it all over again, and you could work around one horse that you had the privilege to be around early on in your career, who would that horse be?
As far as riding or training?
Let's do both, riding and training.
I think Force the Pass. You know, he's grade one winner. You know, he's a very special horse for me anyways. You know, we've got him from scratch. That was my first year here in Florida with Alan and Richard Santulli. You know, we started him here, and I put him on the grass at Palm Meadows, and I was like, wow, this horse is special. This horse is really special. And, you know, I kind of love that horse. He's the best.
Yeah, he's a fantastic horse. Mike and I were there for the race at Penn National that he won, the Penn Mile, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And he's a sensational horse.
I put my head down that day at the races. I said, we got beat. You know, we got stopped twice, and I was like, that's it. And then I look up, and I'm like, oh, man, he's coming back. I was like, wow, what kind of horse is this?
Yeah, he was a special horse, and you know, one of those horses that, in my opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jorge, he always seemed to show up with his best effort.
Yeah, he tried. You know, he's a racehorse. You know, he's like one of those horses that, from, you know, like I said, day one, he's just classy and did everything right, and, you know, just did his job, and he's good, really good.
Your friend and mentor, Alan Goldberg, had the privilege to train a pretty good one in Champion Safely Kept. You were very young when Safely Kept was bursting onto the scene, but do you remember anything about her?
I don't remember much, but I got all the stories. You know, we share a house when he's here in Florida. So, you know, he tells me all the stories, and I feel like I was there already. You know, all the stories from the test to the Breeders' Cup to everything that – how he trained her, everything. So those, you know, you sit down and listen to those stories, and, you know, it's good. It's really good.
Would you have won the Breeders' Cup on Safely Kept?
Who's that?
So would you have won the Breeders' Cup on Safely Kept?
Maybe. You never know. Red did it. And, you know, good thing Dave George jumped that shadow.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, too. Yeah, that was that same race, wasn't it?
Yeah, he jumped it. He was almost pretty much winning the race and jumped the shadow, and it comes Safely Kept, come back.
Will you go back and watch the replays of the races that you've won? We mentioned the hot start, 5 winners from 15 starts. Will you go back and watch any of those races and kind of, I don't know, try to learn something from them?
Yeah, some days I go back and look at them, you know, just to, you know, keep your drive high, or just like something about a horse that you kind of want to remember, you know, anything. You know, I think, and even Al's horses or horses I got from him, and, you know, believe it or not, you say you go home and you're not thinking about horses, but here you are on YouTube, you're watching something, you race here, race there, and you always, your mind's always horses, horses.
Does a trainer learn more from watching races that you won or races that you didn't win?
I have both, you know. Sometimes you win and you probably didn't deserve to win, maybe, because, you know, something was off or something, you know, something. But not every race, you know, every race is different. And it helps a little bit when you're a jockey. You kind of have a different view of a race because, you know, the position the rider is maybe wasn't the right one, or, you know, like the horse's trip. Maybe you can't blame the jockey completely, not that I defend him, but, you know, or you could see that it was an honest mistake from the jock or the horse, or, you know, any, whatever.
Does it make you more empathetic with riders when you watch a race now? You understand a little bit more than a guy like me that's never been in the saddle, per se. You know, do you feel like that gives you a little bit of an edge?
Well, I think it's different. You know, I it's different to that you were there before and you did it before, and sometimes the situations are not as easy as people think. You know, like it's easier to say to get out of the pocket or this and that, but I think the better riders make less mistakes. They pay a lot of attention, so you pick up on all those decisions they make. You know, or a scenario that looks, you know, like run into a bad spot, all these things that you kind of know from riding that, and then you can see the horses too. You kind of know what you want to bring the horse in, the way that you want your horse to run to the jocks, to make it easier on him. You know, nobody wants to come from dead last and circle the field or try to go through, you know, everybody wants to be in a good position, but it's not easy with, you know, your horse. They all have different abilities, but sometimes you could adjust things to make it a little bit easier on jocks so they have a better trip.
You know, we talked that we've been doing the show for quite a while, 5-6 years anyway. Nobody's ever said that before. You're the first trainer to ever say, you know, I try to look at the way the horse runs and maybe adjust how I train him so that he has more speed or a little bit different running style to make the jocks work easier. I think that's a very unique approach and really smart.
Well, you know, you see like guys like Wesley, and, you know, they always have their horses sharp, they break fast and they keep going, right? So that's kind of simple for the jock, right? Just send them and put them on the lead. But obviously you don't want that to happen in a long race or, you know, depends on the race, depends on everything. But it does help if you have a horse that's sharp or, you know, I don't know, short race, and, you know what I'm going to. But it is an approach. I think, you know, you can't change the horse completely, but I guess you could help some, change a couple things that might help them, in, you know, in the way they race unfolds anyway.
Yeah, make them more tactical.
Yeah, so, you know, it's easier on everybody.
That's great. That's great. It's really that's a very unique insight. I really enjoy that.
Jorge Duarte Jr. with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Jorge, there have been so many trainers on the program over the years, and some will talk about the fact that they like to set goals and they like to lay things out 2-3 years in advance and say, okay, these are the things I would like to accomplish, and maybe it happens sooner, maybe it happens later, but those are the goals they've set. Other trainers say, no, you know what, I just kind of focus on today, and I want today to be successful, and then we move on from there. How about for you? What's your approach? Do you set goals? Do you have things you want to accomplish moving forward?
Well, my number one goal and priority is do the best for my owner, which is Richard Santulli. I want to do as good as I could do for him. You know, he's been very good to me, Alan Goldberg, everybody. You know, I don't want to let him down. Do the best I can. It helps that my name is exposed out there. Future maybe, you know, future clients, public, you know. keep doing what we're doing. I like to train horses, and, as long as they stay healthy, I'll keep doing it.
Well, you've hit the big time now, being on Trainer Talk. You know that, right?
Yes. Yeah, I made it finally. I always listened to it, but I never made it.
You know you've made it when.
Yeah.
If you could win, if you could win one race, Jorge, what is it?
You probably want to win the Derby like everybody else, right?
Would that be the one?
I would say so. My owner dreams of the Derby. I from being a kid, that's the big race everybody wants to win. So, and to me, that's the race.
What's the closest you ever came to competing in the Kentucky Derby?
We working with Al, we had a couple horses. We made the Preakness with Austin Speed. Forced to Pass looked like he was good, but he was better on the turf. So those hopes went down the drain as far as dirt. We did win the Belmont Derby. You have courses, you start them out, you get excited, and, when you hit the next level, sometimes you're a little disappointed, but, that's just the way it is.
It takes a special horse to win on the first Saturday in May, going a mile and a quarter as a three-year-old. If you could create your perfect Kentucky Derby horse, what would that horse look like?
It's a hard question. You always want a fast one and have a lot of stamina, but I don't know. It's just every year you get different kinds and you think that's the one, and it doesn't turn out. I look up to Baffert and all these big trainers that they're consistent. They keep every year they keep coming back and they get these horses, and they do a very good job, and they're very fortunate anyway.
Yeah, a lot of times it's a matter of getting the right horses. I mean, you can be the best trainer in the world, and if your horses are slow, you're not going to win many races.
Now, you could change a couple of things, but you're not going to change 20, 30 lengths.
It's luck in some ways to get the good horses, but when you get the good horses every year, it's ceases to be luck. It's your reputation,
well,
I guess.
And something right. I always say something. These people that win these races, they're doing something right, and they got probably a good team behind buying and then carrying it on, training, and from their breaking, everybody that does all the job, everybody's doing it right. So you got to give them credit.
Yeah, obviously, Jorge, you haven't had that many starters yet. What's the greatest training feat that you've ever seen accomplished, whether it was somebody you were working with, or as a jockey you watched, or you rode a horse that all of a sudden this horse became really good, and it was because of the trainer and the job they did. What would there be a horse that stands out to you?
Maybe not a local horse. Like when I say local, like a horse here in the States. But I saw Nicholas Bachelard, the French trainer. Saudi Arabia, done a very good job with a horse that start from scratch and end up winning races in Dubai, and they're just very particular about everything. Did a very good job, good training job. You look up to these guys and you see like all the decisions they made were the right ones, and that's not easy to do sometimes, but they pulled it off, and I guess that's how these big trainers do. They just do the right decisions.
Yeah, sometimes it's like feeling in your gut or something that's in the back of your mind that you picked up along the way. I mean, you never know what little thing is going to change a horse's career and turn him around.
Yeah, I mean, some horses are easier. They're just strictly racehorses, and but when you got to use your mind and do a couple things to change things around, I give these guys credit. They pull it off, and they're good. They're good at what they do.
Jorge, what advice would you give to somebody who is maybe thinking about getting into this profession and training racehorses for a living?
It's not an easy business, but, if you love it and you want to do it, you'll succeed at some stage because, as long as you have the work ethic and consistency, you'll get ahead.
It's a 7-day-a-week, 300 65-day-a-year job. There's no doubt about it. There's no holidays. The horses don't take a break. You need to be there with those horses. Hard to get time away. But if you were going to step away for a little bit, if you had time for a vacation or a couple of days where you can go chill out and do something else, what other things might you enjoy doing?
I enjoy my family. Unfortunately with Al, he gives me, like a week off a year, or, sometimes 10 days or whatever. And I go see my family, my dad, and, I spend time home and try to disconnect a little bit. Try to, because you end up still watching races. But family first anyways.
Will you follow any other sports or any other teams or anything?
I follow soccer, that's kind of like a Spanish, Colombian kind of thing. I love soccer. Our national team's pretty good. But football I watch, golf, stuff like that. But I put Gulfstream most of the time or races from somewhere. That's what I like and that's what I have on.
Do you like to play the races too?
Not really. I don't even bet my horses either or nobody's. If I'm casual, some social with somebody, at the races, maybe $2 a year to see if I could handicap, but not really.
How often will your friends text you and ask you if you got a good horse in today or if the horse is live?
Some of my friends from back home, they're lawyers, and they're funny because they follow the horses sometimes even more than I do here as far as racing and outside my barn. They know their stuff, and they love it, and they ask me sometimes, and, they're my close friends. I say, I like this horse, and they get pumped up.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot of people in South America follow the races in the United States very closely. I was amazed to find that out, but you're verifying it right now.
They do. They, they have simulcasting, and they follow big time, They love the action and they love the horse racing. You can see the transition of Venezuela going into Gulfstream. You see a lot of these big trainers here now and a lot of populations, South American.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He is Jorge Duarte Jr. He is our special guest on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Jorge, just a couple of minutes left before we have to wrap up the program. We talked about some of the things that you would like to accomplish, including a Kentucky Derby victory, and who wouldn't? Let's talk about a little bit more on the personal side of things. We're going to be down at Gulfstream in a couple of weeks to broadcast the Pegasus World Cup. Give us a good place to go eat when we're down there. What's your favorite?
You got a lot of choices. Depends who the sponsor is.
Best answer ever.
Well said.
I mean, you got Adina Grill, you got any, you got a lot of choices. So, if you're a chain kind of guy, you got Brito, they got a Cafe Laredo, it's like a Mexican, they got Yard House. I mean, it comes down to the sponsor.
I like the way he plugged the Adina Grill, too. He knows how to take care of the home team.
That's right. More stalls next year.
Got it.
Jorge, listen, we appreciate the visit, my friend. Been a delight to hear your story. Congratulations on the successful start. Keep it rolling, and we'll look forward to saying hello when we get down there in a couple weeks.
Looking forward to that, and thank you for having me in the show.
All right. Jorge Duarte Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Again, a guy who really had an impact on the sport, on the riding side of things, winning more than 700 races worldwide, 400-plus here in the United States, was compared to the greats that we have in the sport, like Manny Yakaza and Lafitte Pinkai, because he came from the same jockey school as them when he was first starting out. He didn't disappoint. He won his share of races, and now he's looking to have the same success on the training side.
Yeah, and starting out in a big way again. So the guy obviously knows his stuff. He's got a great personality. He will go far.
You know a thing or two about a fast start to your training career. You kick things off pretty quickly when you got rolling.
Yeah, I won 5 out of my first 7, but it wasn't the Jude Feld show today. It was the Jorge Duarte show.
You should have told him, hey, I won 5 out of 7.
Yeah.
Yeah, no reason to brag.
No.
I'll brag on you.
Thank you.
I got you covered, Pontiff. Yeah. All right, don't forget, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, all you have to do is head to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program, all of our Trainer Talk shows, and all of our talk shows. You can do that horseracingradio.net, and follow us at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Now for our producer, Lee Della Pina, for Jude Feld, for our special guest, Jorge Duarte Jr., I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for being with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.